Hello and welcome to this Independence Day edition of Catholic Answers Live. Many people getting the holiday today. So if you're joining us over hot dogs and potato salad, congratulations to you. I hope you're enjoying them. Thanks for letting us be part of that. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Two very fine guests with us today, and we're gonna for Independence Day do a little bit of a different show. We're gonna consider America in a moment of crisis, really. I mean, it does strike one as a moment of crisis. As a matter of fact, maybe saying a moment of crisis is too generous. Maybe it's a moment of crises. We'll see what our guests have to say about that. Our guests are, in order of importance, Todd Agliolaro, the head of the
alphabetical order.
Amen. Amen to that, by the way.
Hello. Todd is the head of Catholic Answers Press, all these wonderful Catholic Answers books that come out, and booklets, and magazines, and all these things. Todd runs all of that. Thanks for being with us today, Todd Agliolaro.
Hey, Cy, great to be here.
And also with us, the president of the universe, Chris Check. Hi, Press. Hi, president of the universe.
How are you, Cy? And I totally agree with you. Anyone with respect to Todd's importance, anyone who has seen the really dramatic and wonderful growth of Catholic Answers Press over the last decade, all attributed to Todd's hard work. Well,
yeah,
most.
Well, I know. Yes.
There was some authors or something had something to do with that.
By the way, some really great stuff. I see sitting over there, Secrets from Heaven, Father Sebastian Walsh is wonderful. Exegesis isn't even the right word. What do you call it, Todd?
Well, I mean, you call it popular exegesis.
Yeah.
It's scriptural homiletics.
Yeah, yeah. On the parables and the conversations of our Lord, some really wonderful insights. I'm so happy with that book.
It's a great book.
But we got One Less God Than You is out now. That's a brand new book. I hope that does very well. Really a wonderful kind of response to atheist and agnostic kind of memes, or you would say, or slogans.
Yeah, we're calling them slogans. And what's cool about that book is not just that it tackles those slogans that you come across on social media or from your friends, but it takes a really practical approach. We all know a lot of the arguments that we can marshal against atheism, but this gives you kind of a step-by-step practical approach to it that's super yeah. helpful.
I never know the arguments when I need them, though. I'm one of those people. They
yeah.
just escape, so I got to keep reading the books.
Another one, Cy, Mark Brumley, our friend up at Ignatius Press, did a wonderful addition to our 20 Answer Series on Catholic social teaching.
Yes, that's very – Mark is – I thought a lot of light shed in a very small number of words in right. that little booklet, because yeah. that's a topic – people, it's almost like an open free zone. People will attribute everything to Catholic social teaching, you know, without having a genuine understanding of what it is.
Sure.
And particularly that Christ is at the center of it, and I think that it's not a system, you know, it's not a here do what the Catholic Church teaches and the world will be fine as far as like an economic system or a political system. It's a way of understanding how to live with Christ at the center of it.
Yes.
I thought he got that right on.
Yes.
We better mention Pope Peter, too, then. If we're going to mention all these great books. That
Joe Heschmeyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Heschmeyer's a superstar.
He is.
Fantastic book.
All right. So Todd Agliolaro, the director of Catholic Answers Press, Chris Check, the president of Catholic Answers. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And we're talking about a time of crisis. In the notes that I sent you guys about how I want to talk about this, I wasn't joking when I said, what would Tolkien make of this? Because I know that Todd is a big fan of Tolkien and knows the works of Tolkien and the philosophy of Tolkien. And it seems to me that underneath the worlds that Tolkien builds is a spiritual world, and that's also true of a thing called the real world, and we forget that. It seems like there's an ill spirit at loose in the world right now. And I'll start with you, Todd. I mean, as a Catholic, how am I supposed to understand this times where it actually seems that evil spirits, I mean, are at work?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tolkien. I'm not sure maybe this is the connection you were going for, but in a lot of his, or in some of his private letters, you find a theme in which he says something to the effect of, I see all of history as essentially one long decline.
Yeah, defeat. He uses the word defeat.
Yeah. and only to be rescued at the last moment. You know, he coined the phrase the U catastrophe, this great reversal of ill fortune at the end. And of course, you see that in the plot of Lord of the Rings and the Silmarillion, or some of the stories in the Silmarillion. And so, and of course, you see that in thematically in the Lord of the Rings as well, where you have the Elvish kingdoms that are kind of in this perpetual decline, and you have
right.
even the kingdoms of men are a shadow of their former glory. And so this is a kind of melancholy, I think, that pervades Tolkien's personality that worked this way into his.
But you know, it's funny because he prefaces that that line in that particular letter saying, "I am a Christian and indeed a Roman Catholic." So the only way that I can see history is as a long defeat.
Good point.
And that and then he does say, you know, in myth and legend, we do get some glimpses of the final victory that we know that is coming. Yeah.
And he never thought to look for it in the temporal. He realized it's only going to come eschatologically.
This is the Christian view.
Yeah.
I mean, the church that the principle. Evidence. The church has to follow the trajectory of her founder.
Well, if I may, then it seems to me we're going part of the agitated spirit has to do with that we are approaching an election in November, and that's there's always the summer before that is always a little bit wild in the United States, and
this is unprecedented.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe 1968. I don't know what you. There won't be conventions at which to have riots this year, but if there could be,
there are other reasons too. I mean, the people have found other reasons to riot. You don't need a convention. So
yeah, but you get the sense that even in Catholic media, I have to say, I have a little peak at the moment right now, a little annoyance at some of what I'm hearing on Catholic radio, and I want to be very blunt about that. That we give into a temptation to politicize our time on the radio because we think that the politics of the moment are so dire and so the choices are so stark about our future that's being made. I'm going to go back to Tolkien. It feels a little bit like what we're trying to do is wield the ring. You know, we're not. This is not. Having too much faith in political answers, it seems to me doesn't fit with what you both just described as the Catholic kind of approach to history.
No, and it doesn't accord with the Council of King David that the staff has heard me quote ad nauseum here. Put not your trust in princes, in the children of men, in whom there is no salvation. On the Tolkien thing, I'd like to ask Todd, and related to, I think in answer to a question that you're asking, the frenzy, and it is a frenzy right now, a political frenzy that's manifesting itself several ways, but it is exacerbated by the technology, and what's being tweeted. Or pinned or faced or whatever it is. I learned last week of a practice that now is so common it has a name. It's funny how in this age of technology, new names for things come up very, very quickly, much more quickly than they used to. But this practice is called doom scrolling. And it's what people do in the 2 hours when they're lying in bed before they go to sleep, just kind of, I don't know, going through the Drudge Report, looking for a hit of adrenaline or CNN or Fox or whatever it is. And that action is necessarily or will be enervating, and it's not going to give anybody peace. But to Tolkien, Todd, I think I read an interview of Tolkien's one time, or someone had asked him about the Palantir, you know, the mm-hmm. sphere in which you could see things, and someone had asked him if this was an illusion. To television, or a prediction about television, or something like that, and he said that it was.
I'm shocked to hear that actually, because he always resisted any kind allegory. Of implication that something stood for something else.
Right, yeah. But nonetheless, there is this. We live in a time when we're, because of information technology, we're seeing things at a speed and rate and volume that we never did before, and that I think is disturbing the peace.
Well, the Palantir became corrupted, so its initial purpose was good, and its uses were good, and it was only when Denethor used it to get a kind of a curated negative view of events, which speaks to actually to your analogy very well.
Yeah. That, you mean he got CNN on that thing?
I think it was CNBC.
Sauron was perverting the Palantir's vision to make Denethor despair. And I think we could say that that's a really apt comparison to our news media today. It's filling us with despair because of the distorted view of reality that it's giving us.
Yeah, well said, Todd. And this is a question that I haven't even answered for myself. Is this time as bad as it seems to be? And I think there's a great deal of evidence for that. Or am I believing that it is worse than it is because of the rate and volume of technologically provided news, if that's the word we want to use.
Yeah, while we're riffing on Tolkien a little bit, I also recall a conversation that he had with C.S. Lewis. I think I read about it in the Inklings biography, in which Lewis and Tolkien mused on the question of whether they were required to care about every horrible piece of news they heard about from every corner of the world. And this was the 30s and 40s, probably. Right. And imagine how much that's been multiplied today. You mentioned the Drudge Report.
Yeah, yeah. I came across a quote from Charles Peguy 2 days ago, and it goes something like this: nothing is as new as Homer, and nothing is as old as today's newspaper. And that would have been 1913, I guess. Or he died at the Marne in 1914 or something. So, yeah.
Well, this sense, however, that you get from TV that everything is spinning out of control does actually make the spirit spin out of control, and then it tends to make us want a kind of an instant or immediate answer. And I think that's part of the draw of politics, is that we think, well, if we could just get enough Supreme Court justices, which that seems to have been blown out of the water in the month of
that
June,
is a promise, you know, that has not delivered.
Yeah, like it seems like constantly a certain pro-life person like myself, you know, we fall for this. If we can just get enough Supreme Court, it's not that the Supreme Court doesn't matter. It clearly does matter. Maybe you could put it in perspective for me, Todd.
Well, not only that it does matter, but it's not a Manichaean decision here. We can look at the failings of the Supreme Court, especially in recent days, and the ways people have let us down.
And by Catholic justices.
But imagine how much worse it might have been, or look at some other rulings that were close.
Right.
So it's not an either or here. It's the turf war is what it is.
Well, maybe I have to take a break, but when we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, about how the prudent person gets involved in politics. We obviously have political obligations. I don't think there's any question about that, but gets involved in politics and does their proper part as the Lord would want, but without making an idol of politics, which I think is the great danger, because then you miss out on the good news entirely. You miss out on the gospel and life with Christ. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and see if our gentleman can answer that question.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
And there is power in prayer, because prayer is more important than breathing. Prayer can change the circumstances you are in. Prayer can change the world. The most important thing you ever do is pray. And so when you pray, God, you can do anything. And I know you love me more than I love me. So God, I'm handing this all over to you. And I know miracles can happen in my life, and they will.
Welcome back to this special edition, this Independence Day edition, even though tomorrow is Independence Day, which, you know, you get the day off today, so we're calling this our Independence Day edition of Catholic Answers Live. It's a tough time in the United States. It's a tough time all around the world for a great variety of reasons. It's looking like it'll be a tough summer and fall for us here in the United States as well, because, of course, it's a political campaign season, and those are difficult in the best of times, and these are not the best of times, nor are we the best of people, probably. I think it was Hemingway. The times weren't very good, and we weren't very good in them. I think that might be a Hemingway quote. I can't remember. It strikes me that Hemingway said something like that. But you can probably count on
that. Was he sober? Was he sober when he said that?
Or? Almost certainly not. Yeah. But let's not pick on Ernest Hemingway. We were talking before we went to the break, as we kind of reflect on America in crises at this time, about the allure, the temptation to politicize and just become political creatures and put all of our baskets in, or all of our eggs in the political basket. But then there, I suppose, there is the opposite allure, which is to be so spiritualized maybe so in despair that we just don't get involved. So Todd, as the balanced person on this panel, how do I balance these things?
We're in trouble.
Psychologically balanced.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
God help us all. I think there's a kind of tension. There's a kind of almost a paradox in the Christian life. And when I reflect on it, I always think back to a line from T.S. Eliot. I think it's from Ash Wednesday, where he says, "Teach us to care and not to care," and that's addressed to God, and this a novel that both Chris and I count among our favorites, "Death Comes for the Archbishop," when Father Vaillant is going off to Colorado to be a missionary, and the narrator describes him as being torn between the desire to go and the necessity to stay, and both of those kind of poetic lines express for us this tension between heaven and earth, between the realization that there will only be justice and happiness and fulfillment in the hereafter, and yet we have a job to do in this world. So there's an extreme to be avoided on either side of being too worldly, which can lead to its own kind of despair, certainly, and to be too spiritual. Is that the way I characterize it? I'm not sure. But to care too little about the course of events in the world, which could go on for all we know for 10,000 more years. So we better, you know, do our best.
Well, it's a difficulty for Catholics because if you decide that my focus is exclusively on the hereafter, then there's a kind of temptation, as some have proposed, to sort of withdraw from the world. Mm. You know, the Benedict option however it goes. So we are here to leaven the earth.
Well put.
In fact, we have Bishop Strickland has a book coming out on that with that title in it. Yeah, I think that if we have an active prayer life and active sacramental life, and we read widely and keep things in perspective, then we will be good citizens. But also, as all of us are here to admit, we know that this is going to pass.
The thing about being leaven, however, it seems to me that the leaven, the way that we are leaven, is by actually bringing Christ into very specific practical situations. It's not primarily by grand political acts or theories or movements or that kind of thing. That leaven works, you know, molecule by molecule, so to speak. It works on a very it affects the whole dough, but it does so by each bit of that leaven doing its part where it is. What do you make of that?
I think that what you say is absolutely true, and it reveals itself in the reality that one of the conceits or errors, anyway, that a lot of what can we say, conservatives, and that could mean a lot of different things, to be sure, make is that if we can just get this number of people in office, or if we can get the right legislation passed, then we can set this country back on the course that it should be on, whatever that might be. What the difficulty there is that necessary to a free society or necessary to civilization are certain institutions that precede political life, or they are political in the sense that Aristotle would use the word. So marriage, for example, and the household and the family. And when these or the institutions of education, or even the institutions of popular culture, if people are watching good films and reading good books and reading good poems, their hearts are going to be formed. Without these cultural institutions or foundations, no amount of Defense of Marriage Act, for example, is going to restore the culture.
No, that's a really good point. And I write about something like this in my book on marriage, that that marriage and family are pre-political and they're natural human institutions.
Oh, as Chesterton says, they pre-exist the state.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I probably plagiarized that from him subconsciously, but it leads to some really bitter irony. So when the fight over the legalization of same-sex marriage was going on, I had a lot of libertarian friends, who even Catholic libertarian friends, who said, "Well, we can't let the government tell you who you can love," and they saw it perversely as a blow for freedom and a blow against state control to let the state redefine a pre-political institution.
Yeah. Well, I think we've seen now that the libertarian argument, or if maybe there's more than one, has kind of collapsed on its own contradictions.
I mean, it has some appeal maybe in some other quarters. And if you, the more you depoliticize things, the more you keep the state out of human institutions where it doesn't belong, the more freedom of movement you have in theory. But when you misapply that principle, you do a lot of damage.
Sure, sure.
So the we have the book, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist, from Trent, and in which he does a good job of explaining why you can't. But I wonder if there's anyone making the argument or asking the question, can a Catholic be a libertarian? Because I do think that libertarian tendency, really as a reaction to the overweening state. I mean, the invasive, obnoxious state that has been born in the post-war era in the United States, it's gaining traction. There are many, many people who will say, sure, being libertarian is completely consistent with my Catholic faith. I think that they are mistaken. I wonder, is there anyone, first of all, am I mistaken? And is there anyone making that argument? Because I'm sorry to make this question so long, Todd, and I'm going to leave it for you, but it seems to me that Judge Gorsuch exemplified this in his decision on the extension of the idea of sex discrimination going out to the farthest reaches of the transgender idea, is that Judge Gorsuch is a good man and a good judge in a lot of ways, but he's a libertarian and therefore not able to apply a moral standard in the application of the law. As a matter of fact, I think he would say the law is amoral, which is I don't know that he would say that, but that's certainly the impression you get from that decision. So, and I think there are many people, Catholics, who would say, yeah, let's do that. Let's have a place where the law is not a moral thing. We just all work it out amongst ourselves.
Well, you're almost talking about classical liberalism more than libertarianism. Of course, there's a lot of close connections there. And you're putting on the table now the whole American experiment, aren't you? I mean, this is a huge question.
It wasn't an experiment. It was some people who came across the ocean for different reasons.
There are certainly elements of experimentation.
I think when it comes to libertarianism, strictly speaking, I don't pretend to be able to parse out every difference. But it's funny because you look at something like the Benedict option, which Chris brought up, and sometimes the Benedict option is kind of like the new evangelization or some other concept.
Right. It means a lot of different things. Yeah. I'm not even sure that whoever coined it.
Rod Dreher.
Yeah, right. No, but it knows what it means.
Or the Ben op, you know, if you want to be hip.
Oh, right.
But I think its defenders would at least say it's communitarian. It's not individualistic. It's communitarian. And they would
distinguish.
Sure. But you know, it's funny.
Oh,
I'm hearing some music.
There's so many interruptions. We never let Todd make his point.
Don't let me forget my thought.
We're going to get the point. The question has to do with, we know you can't be a socialist and be a Catholic, but can you be a modern libertarian or even classical liberal and be a Catholic? Is that a fair summary of the question that's on the table? All right, right back to Settle That with Todd Aguilera.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Why is it wrong to help someone commit suicide? Don't people have a right to die with dignity rather than being a burden to others? Does the church teach that the terminally ill must be kept alive by machines for as long as possible? In 20 Answers End-of-Life Issues, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you unravel the controversies and confusions surrounding euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the rights of patients in our uncertain healthcare future. 20 Answers End-of-Life Issues is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred Scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries, Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952. Visiting shop.catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team talks about what Mondays mean to Catholics.
Monday morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this Independence Day edition of Catholic Answers Live. We're having a panel conversation about America in crises. We have a whole set of crises we're currently facing, and we'll probably inflict some more on ourselves before November comes. It seems likely. We seem almost addicted to them.
Our best wounds are the self-inflicted ones.
we're good at it. We're getting very good at it. When we left for the break, the onus was on Todd Aguilaro, the director of Catholic Answers Publishing, and we're asking about this libertarian tendency as probably as a corrective to a state that has been out of control for a long time. The idea that we're just let everybody do what they want to do, kind of thing. And is that an answer that a Catholic can settle for, Todd?
Well, and I was building up to what really is a small point, but I was thinking back to 2016 when you had Bernie Sanders supporters and you had Donald Trump supporters, and it became fashionable in some circles to point out that they actually wanted a lot of the same things.
Economic protection for mm-hmm. manufacturing, fewer stupid foreign wars.
And in their popular approach, their populist approach, rather, there was a lot of similarities. And maybe I'm being too clever, but it seems to me there's a little bit of that to be found in at least the stated desires of Catholic libertarians, and they do exist. And the Benedict Option people, I mentioned they consider themselves communitarian, which would seem to be the antithesis of the libertarian ethos. But I think if you got them in a room together, they would both express a shared desire for a smaller family-oriented living, for a relief from the overarching boot of the state. And I think they'd probably find more to agree about, at least in practice, than to disagree about. So you have some funny bedfellows, and sometimes right. when you follow an idea around full circle, you reach its opposite.
You know, so I think in American history, we can actually point to parts or times when Catholic social ideas, Catholic social teaching has accorded with what Todd called the American experiment. I wouldn't use that word. I would just say that different people moved here for different reasons and then agreed on a form of government, but it was limited and it was federal. And of course, when people hear that word nowadays, they think a strong central government. Well, in fact, what it meant was independent sovereign states forming a league or fedus. And
yeah, it's a word like inflammable. It means both things.
Yeah. And then, but really what it meant was a limited central government and decentralized and sovereign states. Now, after the war between the states, we tended to get away from that model. But that kind of Jeffersonian federalism has a harmony with the Catholic principle of subsidiarity, where authority starts with the family and comes out from the family rather than at the central government and comes down. And so you're right. When I was at Rockford Institute, we used to get together with the libertarians once a year for a meeting of the John Randolph Club. And yeah, we had quite a bit in common. It's when they started talking about, you know, strange solutions to the abortion question that you realize that, you know, there's a limit to this alliance.
Yeah, subsidiarity is the word. I think you put your finger right on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, again, you can find out about subsidiarity in the book on Catholic social teaching that Mark Brumley just did. He put it in the proper perspective, I think. But it's something Mark Brumley is very good at, perspective. Okay, so if you here I have – we're talking about the current crises. Both of you, without me prompting you, end up talking about marriage a lot, and it seems to me we've completely lost the battle on marriage. We have the broad acceptance of divorce as a cure for marriage. We have a broad acceptance of things that are not marriage being called marriage and being accorded the respect of marriage. We have courts constantly now. Well, I'll just tell you this. I have a friend who's a family lawyer, has been for, I don't know, 25 years in Massachusetts, a family court lawyer. And he says with decisions like the decision, like the Obergefell decision, he said what people don't see is that those empower judges to get more and more involved in the minutiae of family life because the judges become convinced that family life is a thing that's defined by the state. And so they give themselves permission, instead of going, I don't know, as a judge, I can't solve that. That stays in the family, figure that out. The judges become more and more these minute kind of managers of family life. I think this is happening all around the country because we've decided that family is a thing that the state establishes and defines. Marriage is a thing that the state establishes and defines. It is not a thing that the state protects and has a stewardship over. So as much, there's no sense of stewardship.
That is
because we're not stewards. We're owners.
That's an excellent distinction.
So I'm just putting my despair out on you because you both say, well, how important marriage and family is to the Catholic way of addressing the crises, but we've destroyed it.
Marriages and families are the great rival to the state, and the subordination of marriage and family is a core principle of socialism, at least in practice. You mentioned Trent's book, and the reinvention of family to make it subordinate to the state's interests. We see that throughout the history of communism in Europe and in China. And we see that ideology in socialist groups at work today.
The church has quit the field, I'm afraid, on this question in the main, on the divorce question. Now, sure, we know what the church is teaching on divorce is, and we tell it here on Catholic Answers Live. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I wonder if we do, because divorce is a very serious sin against the common good. We say that? How often do we say that? Mostly we end up with people who are divorced, often not by a choice of their own. They've been abandoned by the other spouse, and we end up comforting them. But where are we really saying the harsh truth about divorce, that it's a sin against the common good to be avoided, with heroic effort, if possible?
Yeah, it's a harsh truth, but it's based on a great and wonderful truth about the nature of marriage. And so it's really edifying when you do have that said. And my good friend Layla Miller, who's the co-author
Amen.
With Trent Horn of our book Made This Way, is a real crusader on this point, and sometimes with very little support in Catholic circles that she should be getting. But it's the flip side of the glorious thing that marriage is. And it's not simply divorce and remarriage and the subsequent commission of adultery that makes it a problem. It's something that does violence to the divine typology and symbolism of marriage.
And
to children.
Yes. To, yeah,
and
children.
One of the proximate causes of divorce is another topic on which the church has largely quit the field, and that's contraception. These two things, now, sure, there are political decisions involving both of them, but the natural law realities surrounding contraception and divorce come before the law because, that has come before the human positive law.
That's right. And then, but now we come around to where people say, well, it's that you Catholics and your pelvic issues again. But these are not merely pelvic issues. The society is structured on the relationship between men and women, on marriage, and on family. These are the basic units of the structure of society. The society is not structured on courthouses and congresses and presidencies.
Yeah, and you say
that,
you Catholics.
That is not the
I apologize. Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
You know what it is? I'm looking at you
the
screen. There's a little bit of a lag in your mouth, so I thought you had stopped talking.
No, that's actually how I talk. The sound comes out a few seconds after.
When you say you Catholics and your pelvic issues, that kind of charge comes not just from the world, but unfortunately from our Christian brothers.
Yes.
In our separated brethren. And whereas we have been pretty united with faithful evangelicals and other kinds of Christians on abortion, there's not nearly been as much unity on marriage, and certainly not on contraception. And Chris's point about the natural law is significant, because I think we find in evangelicalism and in Protestantism too often a kind of divine positivism when it comes to morality.
Yes.
And they've lost hold of the natural law tradition. And so if they say, well, where in the Bible does it say you can't do this? Now, of course, it does say pretty explicitly in the Bible that, Jesus is pretty clear about divorce. And yet Protestantism, can I say the Protestant experiment? No, I won't say that again. The Reformation was founded. Of course, you had the Continental Reformation, but a lot of people believe it wouldn't have succeeded had it not been for what happened in England with Henry VIII. So really, divorce is what kicked off this whole separation.
And Martin Luther's desire to be married.
Sure.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that. So it's at the very roots.
A nun.
And it divided Christendom's energies on these, and we're seeing the ill fruits of that now.
The Catholic faith is a holistic thing. I guess that's part of what Catholic means. And go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm really glad you said that. And one of you can correct me, but I think it's Justin. Is it Justin Martyr in his correspondence with the emperor? And he makes the point that if something is true, well, then it belongs to the Catholic Church. It belongs to us. Now, we may not have exactly at this point have fit all the pieces together, but if it's true, it belongs to the Catholic Church. And that's why and because of that, and apropos of our conversation, I'm intrigued by the work of what we're calling now, the Catholic integralists, who very much want political life, active political life in the United States to be informed by the natural law and the moral teachings of the Catholic Church. Now, the likelihood of their success, we can certainly debate.
Yeah, it's like a notch below distributism, I think.
perhaps so. And then George Weigel, of course, poo-pooed him in First Things, and he said, well, it would be nice if one of these, you know, young guys had ever run for dog catcher or something like that, in his typically dismissive way. But nonetheless, if something is true, then it belongs to the Catholic Church. And this, and the, you say holistic, you're right, Cy. And then this applies, of course, to political life.
By the way, we have to take a break. We're going to come back. We're talking about the current crises. And I guess as Catholics, if you're going to talk about a society in a state of crisis, this is what's going to happen. You are going to end up talking about marriage and family life, because the health of society depends on the health of marriage and family life. And if you're going to try to pinpoint where the origins of crises are, you're going to have to go back to what is happening in the home. If you want one of the best books, as a matter of fact, I maybe the best book you can get to get a concise explanation of the Catholic teaching on sex, life, love. You can get a book called Inseparable from Catholic Answers Press. Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. It came out, I believe, the same summer as the 50th anniversary of Humani Vitae. The stuff in there, I think, will give you a deeper... If you're listening to us saying, what is their point about this? What do they mean when this is holistic? Well, if you want to get five different perspectives that go from the perspective of the husband and wife to the larger societal perspectives, the cosmic perspectives of marriage, you can get it in Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. It's only $10. You can get it for $10, have it sent to your house at shop.catholic.com. We'll be right back.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
The Church has 2,000 years of wisdom to share on what it takes to live life gracefully.
And we're so overwhelmed by how much our faith has transformed our marriage and family especially. We want everyone to experience the incredible gift that the Catholic vision of life and love really is.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak. Tomorrow morning, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to the Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about American crisis today as we celebrate the Independence Day, which kind of stands as the proxy for all of the founding of our country. I suppose we have one other day, Thanksgiving Day, where we remember those first pilgrims, those crazy pilgrims. They were wild people. We're not going to get into it, Chris.
About how crazy
they were.
So I just want to.
I
just want to thank you for saying Independence Day and not 4th of July.
Well, there's two reasons for that. One is it's only the 3rd of July today, and so we're commemorating Independence Day. The other is I know you will fire me if I say 4th of July, because you. There's this European tendency to make a date the thing.
Yeah.
You know, like May Day.
And typically it's revolutionary. Yeah.
Right.
And
it's then a revolutionary
see,
European.
And then you see
tendency.
All the major boulevards in, you know, Rome, for example, whatever, 23 November or September, something bad happened in the Risorgimento against the church,
right.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, and I know that we could probably have a debate here among ourselves about whether there even was a revolution in the United States.
It was an act of secession.
I'm not asking you to answer me. I'm just saying we could debate this. Currently, I am of the mind. This is where I'm currently feeling on what Todd called the American experiment. Bravely, in your presence, referred to it as the American experiment, knowing your antipathy to that term. But I kind of agree with Todd to some degree. I don't want to get fired with him. But I am of a mind now, if we could just have Queen Elizabeth back as the actual direct monarch of the country, I think we'd all be doing better than we're doing. She's not a bad person, Queen Elizabeth.
No, she's wise. Yeah.
Do you ever listen to her Christmas message? She's a Christian.
Father Hugh is a great admirer of hers.
Mm. Well, I think she's an actual Christian. Like, yes. You can't really say that about English kings or queens very often. I mean, occasionally, you know, you get Edward the Confessor.
Right.
Queen Elizabeth. Those are the two. I think she's a real Christian. Okay. So I'm glad we took I won't call it a discursus, but we took a little trip into the Catholic teaching on the fundamental position of marriage and family life. And you are going to be a society in perpetual crisis if you don't at least approximately get right what a family is. I truly believe we've lost that. I mean, President Trump is very popular among pro-life people, and I completely understand why. But he wages no battle at all in defense of the natural family. None at all. He has utterly abandoned the field on that. He's not interested in it. As a matter of fact, I would assume he probably has a libertarian attitude about it himself. It seems like we make our voting decisions now based not on who best promotes the common good. And I don't mean this to insult politicians. I really don't. I just feel like we're left with a position because of the current state of our politics where we're actually just trying to avoid as much catastrophe as we can. Who's least likely to bring the most catastrophe? Is that just too despairing a way of thinking about American politics right now?
Well, from our perspective, so many of these battles are rearguard actions now. It's easy to fall into that way of thinking. And I don't completely dismiss a principled choose your battle kind of triage approach to the culture wars, if that's what it takes. There may be other approaches, but I wouldn't disparage someone who made that principled decision.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with what Todd said there.
So it may be a lack of courage. So you never know in any given case, but for some it's not.
But your choice of the word triage suggests that you agree with me that because that's what triage is. You're trying to
save a human life. Yes,
you're trying to save. No, but in some cases you're
pick which life to save, right?
Because they're dead.
Yeah,
because that one's dead. If I spend the next 8 hours operating on that guy, there's 20 others who are going to die instead. Let me save the 20 by triaging that one out.
Right.
So you're saying the family issue is dead. Move on to things that you can save.
Well, the family issue has a number of parts, and I think some of those parts, for example, the definition of marriage, may be dead by now. I don't know of any political will to go back and reverse Obergefell.
This is the point. Politically, it is dead, but in terms of salvation history, it's not. And it may be, I was telling Todd the other day that I came across a line from Hilaire Belloc, where he says you can turn the son of a farmer into a college student in one semester, but it takes three generations to turn a college student into a farmer. In any case, glib, right, but it's going to be several generations before something like marriage comes back, I think, or maybe even more. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't be holding the candle. And we keep the candle aflame. Catholics do that. Catholic Answers does it. The church should do it. And then somebody's going to touch it to the bonfire, and then it'll come back.
Let me give an alternate possibility, that America just simply loses its position of leadership in the world, and it's taken up by African countries, or it's taken up by
Eastern European countries.
Yeah.
Who have not abandoned common sense And so, I mean, to me, it seems much more likely that China would be swept by conversions to Christian faith than that the United States will come back to a position of moral sanity. I actually think that. If you say, well, it's salvation history we're worried about, it seems to be more likely that the Chinese are going to get it right than we are.
Wow, at this point. Those are long odds on both of those. I'm not sure.
Well, the Africans, go to Africa then.
No, I think Todd's mention of Hungary.
Hungary, Poland, and even now Russia, which just ratified its constitution so that they won't have same-sex marriage.
Can I say that's part of why this constant media campaign against Russia? Because it's
and
still
Hungary,
Christians
and
in
Poland,
Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that in a non-political way, but you have a massive Orthodox Christian country that has not lost its moral compass in the way that the West has, and we constantly abuse them in our press. Do you think those two things are a coincidence? I do not.
No, they're by design.
And you know, you get back in. So if we can connect, maybe we were talking about the Reformation earlier, and which was another kind of experiment, I guess. And the principle of private interpretation, the enshrinement of the individual as the arbiter of right and wrong, made so it's possible that America, which in some respects is still a Christian beacon compared to a lot of corrupted Western Europe, and I think there's still a momentum there. We have a lot of we have a lot of faithful Catholics who aren't burdened by a lot of the interference of the state in the faith that you saw in Europe,
right?
And we have a lot of momentum from a lot of faithful evangelical Christians too, who kind of keep the flame going. But at the same time, you get the sense that maybe when we do fall, we'll fall even harder because of the commitment we've made to individual interpretation of morality. It's kind of there in the very bones of American Protestantism. And if you want, I don't want to sound like an integralist because I'm not, and I don't want to sound anti-American because I'm not either. I'm probably more favorable towards American liberalism than Chris is. But at the same time, I have to recognize the weakness there. And maybe it takes a country where they've got a longer cultural memory of the faith, where the embers are starting to glow hotter, like in a Poland or a Hungary, or even a country that was a great oppressor like Russia. Not so sure about China, though. We'll have to talk about that one later.
I don't know. I think China is a natural fit for Christianity because of its Confucian history. I think it's too bad what's happened in China. It seems to me the communists are actually a tremendous interruption to Chinese history. Instead of I don't see how communism or what is now really a kind of pseudo communist fascism in China. I just don't think it can last. I think they'll remember their Confucian past at some point.
Well, a nation that deliberately kills its own children can't last. That's for sure.
Which nation are you speaking of now?
China.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
is that the only one that strikes you as having that problem?
No. Well, I told you it was long odds for both. So
Fair enough.
Whereas in Hungary now they have policies that encourage childbearing, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of God European countries are instituting pronatal tax policies and things, but Eastern European Christian countries in particular are being aggressive with that.
Now, the demographic winter is well in. It may be too late, but I mean, that doesn't mean that, I mean, the lost causes are the best ones, so.
All right, well, I think we're heading towards the end of this hour, and there are more crises to cover in the second hour. I do want to, a whole bunch more to cover. I didn't mean to get into guess which country is going to be the most Christian 100 years from now, but I'm going to go with Nigeria. If we're betting, I'll go with Nigeria. Okay. So let's talk next hour about some positive program going forward. There are more issues. Well, go ahead.
This hour has not been positive.
It feels a little bit. It's been a little bit of a downer. I'm just going to go with that. But I do also want to get to earlier. We had a historian on Catholic Answers Live earlier in the month of June who compared our current state to the French Revolution. I want to ask you about the French Revolution and How does a Catholic respond when, if you wake up one day and you're in the middle of the French Revolution? That'll be the question we'll start with next hour. Todd Agliolaro, one of our guests. Todd is director of publishing here at Catholic Answers. Chris Check, our other guest, he is the president of Catholic Answers. I am Cy Kellett, your host. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of our Independence Day discussion on America in Crisis.